Today's episode is brought to you by Canby Foursquare Church. Since 1978, a place to grow, connect, and serve. In-person services are back with some restrictions to help ensure everyone stays safe and healthy. For the latest, visit their website at canbyfoursquare.com.
This episode is also brought to you by Chris Salee, your local health markets insurance agency. Creative solutions for your health, Medicare, and life insurance needs. Personalized advice at 503-678-5768. Welcome to Now Hear This, Canby,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me? The rains that have soaked the area over the past week have brought welcomed relief to those reeling from the raging wildfires, but they have not brought them to an end. Incident commanders of the Riverside Fire in Clackamas County said Friday that the 138,000-acre conflagration will continue to smolder in the remnants of the thick forest it has ravaged for the better part of this month. While the rain has moderated fire behavior, especially in open areas where grass and brush are the primary vegetation, it will not put the fire out, said Incident Commander Noel Livingston. Fire will continue to smolder under the tree canopy and heavier fuels like logs and stumps. The cooler weather and favorable conditions have aided firefighters this past week as they continue to search out and extinguish hotspots close to the fire's 90-mile-long perimeter. Containment is still estimated at 34%. The other large fires in Clackamas County, smaller than Riverside but also much closer to communities like Colton, Malala, and Estacada, are almost completely contained. The Willoite Fire is 532 acres and is 94% contained, while Dowdy, Unger, and Graves Creek are all 100% contained. Crews are working to reinforce existing lines to 250 feet within the fire imprint to ensure the clean fire lines and reduce potential for spread. Mop-up operations are ongoing for all fires, with contractors using excavators to break down berms caused by dozers on the fire line. Crews are continuing to monitor the fire areas for downed trees and debris flows from the incoming weather. Skies are predicted to be clear and dry into this week. South and southwest winds are expected, with gusts on the ridgetops reaching up to 30 miles per hour. As the weather breaks, these areas may produce visible smoke, but will not threaten fire containment, officials said. If warm and dry weather does continue, activity and smoke production may increase by the middle of this week. Initial attack crews responded to one fire call last Friday for smoke identified within the Unger fire imprint. Residents are asked not to call 911 for smoke seen within the fire areas unless there is active fire that is spreading or threatening a structure. The entire Willamette Valley will see good air quality for the next few days. Areas closest to the fire perimeter may experience moderate smoke impacts in the evening when temperatures drop and pool pockets of smoldering fuels under the nighttime inversion. Residents are cautioned to avoid driving beyond road blockades near fire areas. Officials ask that you please give firefighters space to work so they can safely move around the fire perimeter.
The plans for a massive overhaul of the Donald Aurora interchange on Interstate 5 go before Marion County Commissioners this week. The Marion County Board of Commissioners will hear the matter at 9:30 a.m. Wednesday, September 30th. The meeting comes on the heels of news that engineers have completed the in-depth comprehensive interchange area management plan for the project, which is available on our website, canbefirst.com. The plan documents the traffic volumes, the interchange performance needed to define appropriate levels of service, and establishes an agreement with local government and stakeholders on the transportation solutions, policies, and actions needed to improve the interchange. The existing interchange was built 60 years ago and designed to handle the traffic of that day, when its closest neighbors were a handful of quiet farms. Today, it is the access point for three busy truck stops as well as an RV park and sees approximately 32,000 vehicles per day. ODOT officials admit the interchange has been over capacity at peak times for many years and has significant safety issues. The project is in the preliminary stages with engineers documenting current traffic volumes, interchange performance, and desired levels of service. Officials don't want to get in the same situation with the new interchange where it is at capacity almost as soon as it opens. They want to revamp the exit to be able to handle current traffic levels as well as any future growth. The concept engineers would prefer to utilize is what's called diverging diamond interchange, originally pioneered in France. This unusual design actually requires overpass traffic to briefly switch over to the wrong side of the road, the upset being that it most improves safety by eliminating the need for any left turns. The design phase is planned for next year, with a bid letting in 2021 and construction for the first phase of the project in 2022. The project is currently being allocated a total of $28.3 million, most of it coming from House Bill 2017, the so-called Keep Oregon Moving package. $28 million certainly seems like a lot, but not when it comes to highway projects. This would only carry the project through design and phase one. ODOT says funding is not currently available for construction of a full interchange. A teenager was stabbed by a 50-year-old man on a bike path near Interstate 205 near Clackamas because he asked the man for a cigarette, police say. Kay Newcomb of Milwaukee was arrested Wednesday, September 23rd, faces multiple charges after an incident in which he allegedly assaulted Clackamas 18-year-old Tommy Lee Smith after Smith asked him for a smoke. This question appeared to make the suspect upset, the Clackamas County Sheriff's Office said in a press release. An argument ensued and the suspect stabbed the victim. The suspect, Newcomb, is well known to authorities, the Sheriff's Office added, with numerous prior arrests dating from 1993 on a variety of charges. Deputies were dispatched at 3:45 Wednesday on a report of a disturbance involving a knife on the multi-use bike path along I-205 under Highway 224 in Clackamas. Deputies arrived on the shoulder of I-205 and had to jump the fence to get to the bike path. Both Smith and Newcomb were still at the scene. Smith had been stabbed in the chest and appeared to have a punctured lung, deputies said. Several deputies began treating Smith's injuries and stabilizing him using a chest seal and pressure bandaging because of the punctured lung. They followed up by wrapping the victim in a space blanket to help mitigate hypothermia and shock from the loss of blood. American Medical Response and Clackamas Fire District paramedics arrived. Smith was transported by ambulance to an area hospital for treatment. Newcomb was arrested and booked at the Clackamas County Jail. His charges include 2 counts of first-degree assault, 2 counts of unlawful use of a weapon, and 1 count of second-degree attempted assault. Bail is set at $250,000. An event to show support for the men and women who serve in law enforcement is being planned for October 3rd along the sidewalks of Waite Park in downtown Canby. Those attending the Canby Backs the Blue event are asked to arrive at the park starting at 1 p.m. with flags and signs or notes of encouragement and appreciation for our men and women in blue, according to the Facebook description. An organizer told Now Hear This Canby she wanted to do something positive for our local police. I was just expecting to do something small, a simple flag wave and give appreciation notes to the police department, she said. I am also going to give appreciation notes to the fire department since they have been helping out with Malala with the wildfires. After the event was posted in several community Facebook groups this week, though, including the 21,000 member strong Canby Now, organizers say attendance will likely be much more than she anticipated. And she said, it is exciting and encouraging. I wouldn't say that I'm anyone special per se. I'm just a stay-at-home mom that wanted to do something positive to show support, she said. I do know that there is strength in numbers, as I have seen with the other Back the Blue events. A similar event called Police Solidarity was staged in Waite Park in June, including remarks from Canby Mayor Brian Hodson, Canby Council candidate Jordan Tibbles, who had not announced his candidacy at the time, and other local men. Another event, which shared the same organizers, included attendees waving American flags, some with a blue line, as well as signs and banners supporting the re-election campaign of President Donald Trump, was held several weeks later at Interstate 5 overpass near the Canby exit.
Ashley Eddings and James Brown had made their peace with their COVID wedding. They had gotten engaged on Valentine's Day. It was a sweet story, though with hindsight, their timing could have been better. Ashley, who works in administrative support at the Oregon State Hospital in Salem, had had a bad day at work. In no mood for romance, she had gone straight to bed. James, a landscaper and volunteer firefighter with the Lyons Rural Fire Protection District, surprised her, not with a ring, but a rock, a heart-shaped rock a teacher had given him in the sixth grade with the admonition, "You only give your heart away one time." And that was how he proposed to me, Ashley says. He gave his heart to me that day. It was another couple of weeks before they told their families. James made me wait to tell people until the ring got resized and to come back, Ashley explains. They shared the big news on February 29th, one day after the first case of COVID-19 was confirmed in Oregon. By the time Ashley's mother had booked a flight from Tennessee to help her pick out a wedding dress, the global pandemic was beginning to set in. Airplanes weren't going anywhere. Dress shops were closed. "I bought my wedding dress online," she says, the voice of a bride who had long ago accepted that her 2020 wedding wasn't going to be exactly like she'd pictured. "I tried it on for the first time in my living room by myself." Two things that they did have going for them. They'd picked a date in October. Ashley says we're not really summer wedding folks. And they had a venue, Camp Cascade, a retreat center and sports camp located near Lyons on the banks of the Little North Fork of the Santiam River. It was the first of three that Ashley had arranged to see in early March, but after one visit, she canceled the other two. It was a perfect venue for them for lots of reasons. To keep things simple, the camp was willing to host a wedding, reception, and rehearsal dinner, and were taking care of all the details, catering, linens, tables, chairs, just everything that goes with a wedding, Ashley sums up. They reserved the camp lodge for the reception, a grand old building with a massive indoor fireplace and outdoor fire pit that came stocked with firewood. True to the camp theme, they planned to toast s'mores for each other instead of sharing a traditional wedding cake. The couple also has personal connections to the place. James's uncle was a director of Camp Cascade when he was growing up, and he had spent summers working there as a camp ranger, which James now realizes was a glorified name meant to make the guy who has to fix everything and take the garbage out sound cool. Ashley hadn't visited the camp before, but her grandmother had used to work there. She was the camp's longtime cook and a notorious prankster. "She's such a rambunctious lady," Ashley says with a laugh. She told me stories of taking her co-workers' pantyhose and running them up the flagpole. She would do harmless pranks like that. Ashley and James did a final visit to Camp Cascade at the end of August to finalize their plans and review the latest coronavirus guidelines. "We had contingency plans for everything," she says, "like if folks showed up without masks, we were going to have masks available. We went through the whole nine yards, and we thought it was going to be fine. September 8th started like any other day in the San Am Canyon. James and Ashley had spent the weekend camping. The Lyons Fire District, like most fire officials across the state, were on high alert, afraid that the dry conditions, an abundance of fuel, and high winds predicted for that week could create a perfect storm ripe for dangerous wildfires. The signs were there, but no one knew what was coming. Initially, we got called out to a fire that was between Mahama and Staten, James recalls. We were there for a couple hours. Then once that scene was wrapping up, we heard over the radio that Gates had a fire up on Potato Hill. The couple had been in contact throughout the day. Up to that point, James had told her he didn't think evacuations were a likely scenario. But, "I'm a worrier," Ashley says. "I packed our whole house." Everything changed when James's crew got to Gates. "We were sitting at the bottom of Potato Hill," he says, "and the entire hillside was on fire." In almost 17 years of rural fire service, it was by far the largest inferno he had ever seen. They reached the area they had been assigned to do structure protection and were just getting the lines set up when a new order came in over the radio. James relays a censored version of it: "You guys need to get the F out of there right now." The winds had just changed direction and the embers were raining down, he says. The yards were catching on fire all around us. We hopped in the truck. I looked for our exit, and our exit was on fire, so we basically drove through flames to get out. As the nearest firehouse not engulfed in flames, Lyons Fire District soon became a hub for most of the crews fighting the Beachy Creek conflagration. James and the dozen other volunteers that comprised the Lyons Fire District would each log more than 150 hours over 9 days. Their main concern now is that despite the governor's emergency declaration, they may not be reimbursed for wages lost while protecting homes and infrastructure in the area. The status of Camp Cascade is still uncertain. It's known that Beachy Creek rolled right over it, but it's possible that some buildings may have been spared. The road to the camp is closed and will require extensive cleanup before it reopens. Even the owners won't be able to visit until then. At any rate, things were not looking good for October 1st, Ashley and James's wedding date. Ashley posted on Facebook and some of the many Oregon wedding groups of which she is a member. It was part an opportunity to vent, to grieve, and part a cry for help. The wedding was 20 days away, and the thought of starting from scratch felt overwhelming. The responses flooded in. Planning a wedding in less than 3 weeks is no easy feat, but Ashley would not be alone. There was such an outpouring of people really wanting to help out, and everyone who contacted me was a stranger, she says. They were all, "How can we help? We have things to donate. Tell us what you need and we'll get it to you." One of those strangers was Leslie Wise of Lavender Owl Farm, a brand new wedding venue that has been taking shape throughout this year at a former nursery property south of Canby. She insisted on providing the stage for James and Ashley's big day free of charge. "Leslie is an amazing woman," Ashley says. "She reached out to me and said, 'We have this place. Please come see it. If you love it, it's yours.' She is so fabulous. She and all these other amazing women, they have given us a chance to have the special day that we thought was destroyed." She visited a few days later with her mom and her maid of honor. "As soon as I saw that place, I was like, 'This is it. This is where we want to be,'" Ashley says. "I can't even explain how well it has all worked out. It's just an amazing outpouring of community support for us." Ashley and James laugh when asked about the traditional wedding vow, for better or for worse. They're hopeful that the worst is over, at least for a while. "A couple of days ago, it finally hit me. You know, we're getting married," she says. "This is a cool time. And we've got a heck of a story to tell the grandkids one day. Guess what Grandma and Grandpa went through right before they got married."
Police beat for the weeks of August 18th through the 31st, and folks, things are starting to heat up a little bit. Get it? Because of summer? And also because people seem to be losing their minds out there? I'm just going to stay safe here in the studio and read about it. On August 18th at 1:25 a.m., an underage driver was cited for minor in possession of marijuana. At 4:38 a.m., a group of juveniles seated at a picnic table were contacted due to the time and subsequently driven home. Also, the officer gave them all a watch. I'm joking, he didn't do that. He just had them go home. At 10:14 p.m., after lighting an aerosol can on fire, a transient was arrested on an outstanding Clackamas County warrant. Not because he started a fire in August, but whatever. On August 19th at 9:18 p.m., a driver was arrested for DUI alcohol. On August 20th at 10:54 a.m., report of a restaurant window being broken overnight. I mean, you never know. Maybe they really wanted your food. It could have just been that good. On August 21st at 7:03 a.m., report of a car window being broken overnight. Maybe the same person broke it and, you know, they got their snack and then they needed a ride home. We don't know. And there's absolutely zero evidence that that's the case. At 11 p.m., a baggie containing what appeared to be an illegal substance was turned into police for destruction. On August 22nd at 9:58 a.m., report of graffiti spray painted on a school play structure on Grant Street, North Grant Street specifically. At 12:30 a.m., a driver was arrested for DUI, controlled substance, and possession of methamphetamine, as well as a parole violation. The parole violation probably being the methamphetamine that they had on them. At 5:07 p.m., report of more graffiti spray painted on a different play structure on Northwest 5th Avenue. At 5:54 p.m., response to a report of an assault, one arrest was made. 9:27 p.m., a driver was arrested for possession of methamphetamine. And 11:04 p.m., theft of a bicycle from inside of a residence. That's not fun. At 7:41 p.m., response to a report of a theft at a store, the suspect's vehicle, which had previously been reported stolen, was recovered along with all the stolen merchandise. At 4:39 p.m., response to a report of a suspicious person approaching juveniles at a city park. Officers located the suspect and cited him for criminal trespassing. On August 26th at 2:53 a.m., response to a report of two individuals breaking into vehicles. Officers located the suspects, who were both minors. What were they mining for? Do you think they were mining? Don't shake your head at me, Cameron. That's a hilarious joke. Come on. 7:45 a.m., report of a hit and run damage to a vehicle parked in a store lot. At 9:30 a.m., three reports of trespassing were received regarding the same transient individual. The individual was cited and released. Officers attempted to clean up the trash he left behind. On August 27th at 6:38 a.m., theft of tires off of a vehicle parked near a residence. That straight up sucks. Stealing tires off of someone's car? Come on. At 12:14 p.m., report of an argument between drivers in a parking lot. Like I said, things are starting to heat up. At 10:55 p.m., a driver was cited and released for misuse of an individual driver's license and for failure to surrender a suspended license. On August 28th at 7:58 a.m., response to a report of a fire that had been started by a transient near some bushes at a business. The suspect was later located and arrested for reckless burning. At 10:45 p.m., response to a report of a gun being fired. Officers located and questioned a group of intoxicated individuals in a parking lot, but no evidence of a firearm was found. On August 29th at 1 a.m., following a pursuit of a speeding vehicle, the driver was arrested for attempting to elude a police officer, and a passenger was arrested for an outstanding warrant. At 1:46 a.m., a driver was arrested for possession of methamphetamine. 3:55 p.m., response to an injury in a vehicle pedestrian crash. We hope that whoever got injured is okay. At 11:42 p.m., a juvenile driver was cited for a minor in possession of alcohol. That is not a good place to start your driving career, my dude. On August 30th at 1:34 p.m., report of a hit-and-run damage to a parked vehicle. Of course, we live in Camby. They're not safe here. At 3:27 p.m., report of theft from inside a home, possibly by other occupants of the resident. That's interesting. At 5:59 p.m., report of a loose dog entering a residential backyard and biting the homeowner's dog. And on August 31st, we have at 3:51 a person who refused to leave a restaurant bar and they were totally fine. Nothing happened to them. They got their money back, everything. I'm lying. They were trespassed from the location because you can't refuse to leave other people's places of business. That's not how it works. Society has rules. Although it seems from this list that a lot of people don't think that it does. Anyway, remember to stay calm out there. Stay chill. Don't get too hot. Hey, Frankie, do you ever wonder why some businesses aren't, like, more transparent?
Oh, yeah. Like, some of the old buildings downtown are so dark. Get some more windows, you know?
No. I mean, like, transparent as in being open and honest about their business practices.
Oh.
Yeah. Like, DirectLink is a good example. They don't have internet data caps or charge extra fees for high usage.
Oh, yeah. Which is great with all the internet I've been using since this whole COVID situation started.
They also don't charge infrastructure build fees like some other providers. And they're active in our community, too. Check out their philanthropic efforts at directlink.coop/community.
Did you know that they also hold an annual meeting every year where members can talk directly with the board of directors and upper management?
Talk about transparent. You won't see any other companies being that accessible. DirectLink really is here for us. Call 503-266-8111 or visit directlink.coop to learn more today.
Well, my guest on the Can Be Conversation today is Wayne Austin. He's a upstanding community member of Austin's Auto Body Shop and other things. But we're here today to talk about his recently being recognized for 50 years of service to the Can Be Fire District, currently as the volunteer chief. Hi, Wayne.
How you doing?
I'm good. Obviously, you know, the anniversary is just the date that it was, but falling so close to these historically unprecedented wildfires that have demanded a huge response from Can Be Fire and many other local districts, both career and obviously many volunteers, really shows the importance of the work that you do.
Yeah, we've been real busy.
Yeah.
The last couple of weeks.
Understatement.
Yeah. So first for me, it's never had anything like this ever happen. So
sure.
Hopefully it's the last.
Yeah, yeah. So in your 50 years, there's obviously been some large structural fires, not really huge wildland fires that we've dealt with. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
That's right.
Yeah, yeah. How did you get involved with the volunteer side of Can Be Fire? Can you remember that far back?
Oh, yeah, I can. A good friend of mine, we were out motorcycle riding down mm-hmm. at the Trask River mm-hmm. 50 years ago. Mm-hmm. And he had joined the volunteer fire department. His name is Bob Workman.
Here in Canby.
Here in Canby.
Yeah.
He doesn't live here. I don't know. I think he lives up in Washington now. But anyway, he was a member of the volunteers. And he asked me if I wanted to be a volunteer firefighter.
You said you were out fishing?
And we were out motorcycle riding.
Oh, motorcycle. Yeah.
That evening around the campfire, we were just yakking and talking, and I said, yeah, kind of sounds like a great idea, so that next Thursday, I came down to the fire station, and that started the whole thing off.
Yeah. So you guys got Siri running this place, huh? Sounds like.
Yeah.
Computerized voice. No, but that's cool. So you just kind of took to it pretty immediately?
Yes. At the time, I was working in town. Mm-hmm. I was working at Ritter's Body Shop, which was over where the Quonset Hut over behind Canby Import.
Okay, yeah.
It's a beauty shop or beauty something now.
Yep.
And, of course, the fire station was just out the back door about a half a block away. So
yeah.
when I joined the department, it was I'd made a deal with my boss that I'd just make sure to have things done
yeah.
in case we had a fire
right.
or something. And I'd just stop what I was doing and run out the back door and half a block, and I'd be on the back of the engine, and away we'd go. So, yeah, it worked out real well. And then, of course, Within a year, I had started my own business. Mm-hmm. And of course, it was easy to do, to come to the fire station, because I just locked the door and take off.
Hang a sign on the door.
Right. In those days, you could do that and get away with it. Now, if you were to lock your business up and say you went to the fire, you'd probably have, you know, customers that weren't real happy.
Yeah.
You know, so, but back then they realized that it was mostly businessmen and people in town that were the firefighters. And so they knew that if that whistle went off, that there would be probably a lot of businesses that were locked up because they were going to the alarms. So that's just how it worked.
That is, I'm really glad you brought that up, because that was definitely something I wanted to ask you about. That's an aspect that's obviously, unfortunately, a little before my time, but something that really fascinates me about, you know, that era and many years before as well, where fire districts, even in urban cities, were mostly volunteer run, and it would literally be, you know, the hardware store would have a little piece of paper on the door that says, you know, close to go fight a fire back in, you know, a couple hours or whatever, and people just understood that. I even heard stories about, you know, they would, in much earlier days, they would leave the doors unlocked, and people would just, you know, if they needed to get something, they would just leave money on the counter, and there was that kind of trustworthiness, but that's got to be interesting to see how that's evolved over time with you being the volunteer chief. How long have you held that role?
Oh, it's been, our last chief was Bob Herman. Mm-hmm. And then came, I think it was prior to Chief Davis coming in. Mm-hmm. So I think he's been your 5 years.
Yeah.
Probably 7 years now.
Okay.
Chief Coons made me the volunteer chief, and then Chief Davis made me a division chief of the volunteers. So it's probably been 6-7 years or better.
But you've seen that kind of evolution. I'm interested to hear a little bit more about. Obviously,
that goes on all day.
obviously, society's just changed. You know, business owners can't leave their stores open anymore. But another big thing is a lot of folks who don't own their own business, maybe some that even do, are not in the communities in which they live, in which they might want to serve for the fire district. They may work in Portland or down in Salem, or so it's not really something that would even be a possibility where they could volunteer.
And that's been the big change.
Yeah.
When I first got in the department, of course, it was all volunteer.
Right.
We only had a paid chief. That was it.
Yeah.
And we had a fire whistle.
Yeah.
And there was 15 fire phones in town.
So what's 15, a fire phone?
Well, 15 members
had
a phone that had a button on it.
Uh-huh.
And when a call came in to 911, 15 phones rang.
Wow.
And so it was up to somebody to answer the phone and find out what the problem was. Now, the only problem with that was if you'd had a phone for a long time, which some did, you knew that if you answered the phone, that everybody else was taken off for the station. And you were left getting the information.
Yeah.
And you were also left to push the button for the siren.
Yeah.
So if you said fire department, you probably weren't going to make an engine.
Yeah.
Because they were all full by the time you got down there.
Yeah.
So it was kind of interesting that how that worked. I mean, you were kind of the newer guys were anxious about fire department, getting ready to push the button, but it took them a while to figure out that they never got on the engine because everybody else took off. Now, that didn't mean they knew where they were going, so sometimes you had to wait till that guy came down because nobody was on the phone except him. And so, but the engines were all staffed and ready to go. So, but it was interesting back then because we had the whistle that told everybody to get to the station, the 15 fire phones.
Yeah, so that person who took the call, they may not be able to make an engine, but the engines would be waiting on them, right? Because they would have the information.
Well, that's correct.
Yeah.
Somebody would normally hear a little bit, but they wouldn't. but they wouldn't answer.
Gotcha.
In a way,
just listen
go.
In.
So
yeah.
9 times out of 10, they knew where they were going.
Yeah.
It's just the poor guy that answered the phone.
Yeah.
He was still blowing the whistle when the engines were going down the road.
Only, I mean, it's a long time, a long service for you, but still, only 50 years ago. It's crazy how fast things have changed.
It's completely done a complete opposite.
Yeah.
Now we have three, you know, fire chief. We have two more chiefs. We've got two office people.
Yep.
Myself for in here.
Yep.
We've got, you know, almost 20 paid firefighters.
Right.
And we've got, with the volunteers and the rehab group and our chaplains, we have 30 mm-hmm. volunteers that are in those different areas.
Gotcha.
And yes, it has changed because now, and the other thing that's changed drastically is the fact, and you mentioned it, is a lot of them don't work in town.
Right.
And as soon as that changed, you know, before when I joined, I mean, everybody was right around the station.
Right.
You know, businesses and business yeah. owners and people that had people working for them, they were able to leave.
Right, and that community buy-in, even the folks that weren't volunteers,
yes.
like you said, they knew if that siren went off, that, Bob was going to be down at the fire and Wayne was
going to
be...
Get out of the streets
yeah.
because there's going to be guys going.
Yeah.
And like you mentioned before, you know, I don't know if anywhere we have a few that maybe work in town, but there again, with things changing so drastically, they just can't leave. Like
yeah.
we've got two guys that work for the Kahoot for the garbage. Just
yeah.
Also, you know, they can't just park their trucks and run down, you know, park
yeah.
them out here and take off.
Sure,
I mean,
sure.
you'd have 100 people calling, why in the garbage man here,
right.
whatever time it was. So,
right.
so that is really what changed volunteers to having to get more paid people
yeah.
and more paid
careers.
People. And once again, growth,
mm-hmm.
more new people. I mean, yeah. When I joined, there was... 3,000 in town.
Yeah.
And now there's whatever, 20,
yeah.
30,000.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
calls going on all day long. You
yeah.
know, before we'd have a call every now and then.
Right.
And we knew that if we didn't go down, the thing didn't go out,
yeah.
whether it was the ambulance or fire.
Yeah.
And so we had to go, we had to make the commitment that we were going.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because otherwise nothing left.
Yeah.
Now, you know, within a 15 seconds to a minute, our paid folks are in the rigs
right.
and they're gone.
Right.
You know.
Right.
Which I know a lot of people in Canby don't understand how all that works.
Yeah.
But, we have a, you know, people should be very happy with our fire and EMS because they do a great job.
Oh, yeah.
And they get there quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely. So what is the composition of a volunteer firefighter, at least for Canby nowadays? Is there sort of a profile of what, you know, it's not business owners necessarily anymore. What does that kind of look like nowadays? Is there are there commonalities in kind of that profile now?
I think a lot of them are wanting to be firefighters.
Right, yeah, kind of on
and
that
so
path.
And so it's kind of the first step to get involved. It helps them along the way.
A lot of times younger.
Younger
yeah.
Group are to get an honest to goodness, I'm an electrician, I'm gonna be an electrician for my whole life, but I wanna be a volunteer is very difficult to get.
Yeah, yeah, interesting.
Because there's it's time and,
yeah.
and classes you have to go to even start out. It's just really tough now to get
yeah.
a true person that just wants to be a part of the volunteer fire department.
Yeah.
Kids, wives,
yeah.
or husbands, everything that's going on
yeah.
nowadays with the, you know, every kid's got something going on. You're running, you know, mom and dad are running all over the place.
Yeah.
It's really tough to do this.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah.
Anymore.
Are there any things that kind of stand out, Wayne, when you review 50 years with the Canby Fire, either funny stories or just impactful fires or experiences or just relationships maybe? What kind of stands out when you have a chance to reflect?
Well, you know, fire-wise, some of the bigger fires that big store fire when it caught on fire.
Yeah.
I actually had one employee at that time, my brother-in-law, Charlie Potratch. He worked for me. Mm-hmm. I got him in the fire department, so we were both in the fire department. We responded to that big, huge cloud smoke in the sky, pumped all day.
Yeah.
To the big store, that was a huge fire for us.
Yeah.
Then after that, we had the school fire. Uh-huh. You know, for
the old Grant Street school. Yeah.
It was, you know, 4 or 5 stories high that burnt. We worked on that all day.
Yeah.
You know, it's been so many.
What about the diving board factory?
I just missed the diving board factory.
Okay.
The diving board caught on fire, I believe, maybe like 67 or 1967, 68, somewhere around there.
Okay.
Of course, I was in 70.
Yeah.
And I missed that one. I was here. I mean, we had moved here because we moved out in the country in 1960, 61, I was a sophomore in Canby when we moved out.
Yeah.
And I just missed that one by a little bit. Yeah. That was, from what I understand, that was quite interesting because they had 55-gallon barrels blowing up and going.
Right, the chemicals, yeah.
You know, heading up in the sky like bombs, and it was fiberglass and resin and all that kind of stuff. And, that was a nasty fire.
Yeah.
But I missed that one. But
from
there on, I seemed to catch all the rest of them.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, I think the biggest, and I was relating this to someone the other day that asked me kind of the same question.
Yeah.
I think the biggest change possibly, or the something that was fun that we quit doing, was riding on the tailboard.
Mm.
That was always fun.
Yeah.
You know, you'd run and if there was room, even if it was heading out the door, you'd jump on the back and the guys would hang on to you and you'd get your stuff on and charge off down a road, whether it was raining, snowing, sleet, sunshine, blowing, or whatever.
Yeah.
That was always kind of fun. In fact, we had one of our fire trucks was an old La France fire truck.
Uh-huh.
And kind of a big flat nose front end thing. And it had a seat about 10 feet long. We could actually get 3 or 4 in that front seat.
Yeah.
And then in the back, we never did ride the tailboard on that, but in the back, facing the wrong direction, was a seat beside the motor, one on each side. The motor, big old diesel motor, and you sat on either side of it. And nobody really liked riding in that one because you were undercover, you know. You weren't on the back like everybody else was. But and like you say, a lot of great people have gone through. I was looking at a mid-80s sheet that I had at home that told all the firefighters, remembering all those guys, you know. There was 35 names on there. None of them are here except for one, and that was one of our firefighters that's got 30 years in.
Yeah,
but everybody else gone.
Yeah,
you know, it was hard to believe all those names. And of course, a lot of, you know, in the 80s and 90s, a lot of our volunteers got hired on and in paid jobs, and then they're gone. You know, they can't be a volunteer anymore when they're working.
Yeah,
as paid.
I think one of the cool things about Canby, probably some other communities as well, is you know, some of those families, you get to see the next generation. I know the same is true of your family.
Yeah, I've gone through 3 almost.
Yeah, yeah. You have the sons and grandsons that are involved.
Yeah, my son-in-law, Sean Brown, married my daughter Sherry.
Mm-hmm.
He just recently started here as a student. Actually, he retired from Clackamas Fire. He's 50, so he was able to retire. I think he had 23 or 24 or 25 years in.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's on his second job. Got a job at Black Butte Fire, and then my grandson, Sherry and Sean's son, Ethan, he was in the same student program in 2 years ago now, at Black Butte, or excuse me, at Crooked River Ranch.
Okay.
Like we have five of them here.
Yeah.
He was one that applied over in Central Oregon and got on at Crooked River Ranch. And he just got a job in June at Umatilla Fire.
Cool.
So that's three generations.
Yeah, yeah.
Grandpa, dad, and son.
Yeah.
So, and at one time, my son was Tim, who owns the shop now.
Yeah.
He was also a firefighter here several years ago.
Yeah.
So, but shop and business and all that has made it real hard to do this also.
Right, yeah. That keeps him pretty busy. Well, do you have an outlook, Wayne, for how long you'll stick around? Another 50 years or so?
That'd be nice, but it'd be 125. You know, I don't know. As long as I can do this, I don't know. I don't know how long. I guess as long as the chief lets me stay.
Yeah.
When the chief retires here another year and a half, I'll be on my eighth chief here. Whoever replaces him, that'll be my eighth one. And I'm sure they'll let me stay until I decide it's, you know, time, and I don't know when that's going to be. I still feel like I'm 40, but I'm going to be 74 here in a couple of months, so it's hard to believe. But
yeah.
I don't know. We'll see. I know the wife would like to do a little more traveling around, and the chief keeps telling me, just go. You know? But, you know, it's hard.
In a nice way.
It's hard to go when you got your pager strapped to your side and you're, you know, I've been doing this since I'm 23 years old.
Right.
It's hard to just, you know,
walk away.
Hang it up and go.
Yeah.
Kind of tough.
Yeah. And there's that, that sense of duty probably where you feel like, you know, who could do it better than me?
Well, there's a lot that can do it better than me, but I try to be an example for the new people. You know, many years ago when I started my business back in, well, about a year after I joined the fire department, you know, there was a chance that, you know, to be in the Kiwanis and to be in a Rotary.
Yeah.
You know, they want you in all these things as a businessman, in the chamber.
Chamber board, yeah.
And, you know, I would try, and I couldn't put 100% into it, and so I quit. And I, when they kept trying to get me to join all that, I said, you know, 100% of my volunteering time is at the fire department, and I just, I can't do all these other ones and feel like I'm accomplishing anything.
Yeah.
So I've stuck to the fire department, and here we are. 50 years later, still here.
Yeah, cool. Well, that's about all the time we have, but I did want to ask you, obviously we'd be remiss, we kind of started with it, but what has been the role of volunteers in your role during these recent wildfires? You've mentioned, obviously, you've been pretty busy, but we've heard a lot about the careers. There's been some cool stories about the not volunteer firefighters, but, you know, volunteer civilians out in rural communities that have done things, but maybe not so much kind of hearing about the volunteer firefighters that have been serving just as hard and just as much.
They have. They've done a really great job. Our rehab, it all started for us Labor Day weekend.
Yeah.
The chief asked me if I could get a crew together to kind of be on standby.
Right.
Because it was hot, and of course we were expecting that on Monday. We were kind of expecting that windstorm and so on to come from the wrong direction.
Yeah.
And, you know, we just knew something would happen. We didn't know what, but so I couldn't get a crew for, I think it was Saturday. We had a partial crew on Sunday, but Monday I had the duty car, and we had an engine, and we had a tender out at the substation, and that first call came in on the Maxburg fire that started, that got the lumber mill and all that stuff on fire. That put us right in the heat of it right off the bat. We took off from the substation, and we went out there to help on the Maxburg fire. The chief was out there. The chief, I don't think, came back for until 3 days later. But then
did you have a sense even then this was going to be
bad deal?
Yeah.
I knew it was a start.
Yeah.
And then you know, we pretty much had that knocked down, except for the mill was still on fire. Then we got the call up on Unger Road.
Yeah.
And the chief was the first one up there, because Colton was all down at the Maxburg fire.
Right.
They were empty when it happened up there.
Yeah.
And of course we were up all night. The rehab group was at the Maxburg fire, helping, and then they were up at the Unger fire helping, which was quite the interesting scenario that was going on up there. And then it was solid all week.
Yeah.
The volunteers that could take the time, a lot of them spent 12, 24 hours up there. We were up there Thursday, Friday of last week when they pulled out, when the feds pulled out. We went up with Aurora, Monitor, Molalla, and just made a presence up there. So I took one of our new people up, which our new folks got a lot of fire training that week.
Yeah.
And then Friday we had a crew go up, and then it's just kind of calmed down since then.
Yeah.
But can't say enough about Colton Fire Department. They were surrounded by fire.
Yeah.
Their whole area.
Yeah.
And it's pretty much volunteer.
Yeah.
Molalla, same with Molalla. Clackamas, you know, it was huge.
Yeah.
I mean, like I say, I've been here 50 years, never seen anything like it.
Right, yeah. Yeah, that's what's crazy to me, the long hours, but also just, I mean, as much as you've trained and tried to prepare, I mean, conditions that even you, in almost at that time, almost 50 years experience, had never seen before. You know,
the
very alien type conditions of dealing with these wildland fires in old growth type forests.
Was it Wednesday morning we woke up in a red glow?
Yeah.
Never seen anything like it in my life. I didn't know where we were. I thought...
Yeah.
I didn't know what had happened.
Right, right.
Went outside, and it's dark, and it's, you're like, you're in a big red bulb, you know?
The gates of heck had opened, yeah.
It was, like I say, it was, I've never seen anything like it. I mean, I've seen some big building fires, but nothing that, like, the whole country's on fire.
Right, right.
And I think that we learned a huge lesson off of this whole thing. I know we were talking to the chief, we were talking at our chief's meeting, there's probably going to be more power turned off. You know, it worked up on Mount Hood. You know, that night they turned Mount Hood off from, I think it was government camp all the way down to Sandy. No fires.
Yeah.
And we're burning up.
Yeah.
So I think people understand that, man, we need to turn the power off in though.
Yeah.
If we got to turn it all off, it would sure save a lot of trees.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, we might lose power anyway, so.
The summer's still out.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they've lost everything.
Yeah.
Why not lose power for a couple days and put the wires back up, and you got everything. So, I think we learned a huge lesson on that. And that was big.
Yeah.
You know, there's a couple things I thought I had not done in my career as a firefighter, and I think I got answered. You know, the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, yeah. So now you are, when that time comes, you're ready to retire.
Well, I don't know if we're ever always ready, but
right.
You know, Canby Fire is ready to do whatever we have to do for our folks and our neighboring folks.
Yeah.
You know, it's, we're there for them and they're there for us, and I just hope that the folks of Canby really realize what they've got here.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of folks just ready for whatever tragedy or medical call, and they're there to help you.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Wayne, for your time. Thanks for
telling
us some stories, and thank you for your long service to our community as a volunteer, as getting nothing in compensation other than just knowing that it needed to be done and you had the ability to be able to help. So thank you.
I'm glad I'm still able to help where I can.
Absolutely. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Stay tuned. Joining us now is Donna Ellison of Ellison Team Homes, a firm serving all across the Portland metro area with three realtors based right here in Canby. Donna, can you tell us how Ellison Team Homes started?
I started in real estate. I grew up with my dad. He was a realtor.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a second generation broker, and I grew up with him on weekends. And I learned a lot eventually working with him for several years and then going out on my own. Our family moved to Canby a couple of years ago, but we really didn't know how it was going to go. And within the first probably 3 months of being here, we literally fell head over heels in love with this place. We love the community, the spirit here. The first Christmas at Waite Park, I was literally crying because everybody was walking around saying Merry Christmas and people were drinking hot chocolate and we got in a carriage ride with the horse and it was just too much. You just realize it's special here. Real estate's always been my passion. It is my professional love. I enjoy the people, the relationships. So much comes out of kind of the intensity that you spend with people. You're really up in their business for a period of time. And sometimes it's a couple months, sometimes it's a couple years, sometimes it's a lifetime.
Yeah.
I feel very blessed at this point to have people that have been with me for almost my entire career. Mm-hmm. Clients that have bought and sold maybe 2, 3, 4, or 5 homes. I have one client that's bought and sold 8 homes with me.
Yeah.
3 generations. It's a beautiful business. It makes for a very full life. Mm-hmm.
How can people find you?
How can they not, really? we have a website, www.ellisonteamhomes.com.
Well, thank you, Donna.
Thank you for having me.
First time is now here. This can be is Scott Anderson. Hi again, Scott.
Hi.
And his lovely wife for the first time, Stephanie. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi.
How are you guys doing?
Good.
Good.
Well, we're here to, for the first time, to not talk about magic necessarily, but this really interesting transformation that is happening in the season at your guys' house. And I hear Stephanie, you're kind of the mastermind behind it, and you just tell Scott what to do.
Basically, yeah. Give me the money and then just do what I say.
Yeah. But
I mean, that's not inclusive to the holiday
exactly.
season.
Exactly, that's not just this time of year. I don't know if it was necessarily your goal, but have kind of created the most Halloween, or it's challenging for the title if it existed, the most Halloween-y house in Canby. Is that right?
I don't want to be known as having the most Halloween-y house in Canby.
How would you phrase it?
The most Halloween is fine.
Okay. Just not the word weenie in it. This started last year, I guess?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. No, it started with the pirate ship.
Okay.
That was what the whole thing, I saw it at Home Depot and I really liked it. And so we got it and then, oh, well, let's add this and this. And so it kind of just kept going from there.
Yeah. Is Halloween like your favorite time of year, or do you like to decorate the house up normally for Christmas and all that? Or?
Yes. Usually, I don't do it before September 28th because our daughter's birthday is the 27th. Mm. I don't always want her to have a Halloween birthday.
Yeah.
But when Halloween comes out inside, it's everywhere as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then Christmas, we have 7 Christmas trees, so it,
7 Christmas
yes,
trees.
Yes. So it explodes in here as well.
Okay.
There's always glitter from October to December, or it's January, like, it's glitter everywhere.
It looks like the North Pole just threw up in here.
Yes, very much so.
Yeah, love it.
So.
Which one's your favorite, Scott? Seasons or holidays? Or?
Halloween through Christmas is just
okay,
great.
Okay, just the holiday season.
I just like the holiday season in general. I love winter, and I love Oregon winters, surprisingly enough, but I spent so many of them in hot, arid climates.
Yeah, they didn't have seasons.
Right, so it's always great.
Yeah. Over in the Middle East, didn't have quite a Christmas season. Too,
No. They didn't get into the Christmas spirit over those places.
Yeah.
Go figure.
But this year, so it started last year with the pirate ship. This year, there's like a whole storyline and there's factions challenging
Scott
armies.
Scott brings the storyline.
Uh-huh.
I kind of
You don't say
I love
performer.
Disney.
You don't
say. I love Disney, and okay. I love going to Disneyland.
Yeah, Pirates of the Caribbean.
And that's kind of where, right. you know, yeah. it kind of started going that way last year.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's kind of my goal. I don't want it to be scary. I want it to be fun. Mm-hmm. And with everything going on in the world right now.
Scott is shaking his head yeah. for the benefit of
he
the
He likes
listeners.
The scary part. But I, with everything going on, I just want people to be able to come by and smile. And
yeah,
it.
I did walk into this house under a sign that appeared to be covered in blood that said, "Dead men tell no tales."
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. You're lucky if this story gets out.
Right. No, yeah. Maybe yeah. maybe this is being played in a like cool. FBI office.
Yeah.
It's funny how it started, too. Like Stephanie said, it was with a pirate ship. And then mm-hmm. like almost right after we put the pirate ship up, we were driving down and a neighbor just around the block had ripped out his old fence and put all the boards on the side of the road, said for free. Mm-hmm. And we were just like, "That's a we could build a pirate dock."
Yeah.
And so then we built a dock. Then we had to build the entrance. And then we got more skeletons. And then we went and we bought pirate costumes at the spirit store for them. And it yeah. just kind of blossomed.
From there. Yeah.
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 And so last year, the theme was just like the pirates were taking over the house.
Right.
And now this year, the pirates have had to band together because there's a skeleton army from hell.
Right.
With a giant that's coming. So,
you know, I think I noticed a couple weeks ago when that portal to hell opened up. The yeah, guy was red.
It was January 1st of 2020.
Oh, there it was. Okay. I thought it was yeah. a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, well, that's when everybody started pouring in.
Oh, gotcha. Kicked the door yeah. open. Cool.
Yeah. So we built a cannon that. It's gonna fire smoke at the trick or treaters.
Yeah, yeah. What did you make it out of?
PVC pipe and scrap wood.
Uh huh.
But yeah. it looks
pretty... exactly like a cannon. Yeah, it looks great. Yeah. There's like other special effects as well. You got a hologram you're gonna have.
Yeah, we have. We'll have a loop of pirate holograms, skeleton pirate holograms,
mm-hmm.
And then we set the upstairs on fire.
Okay.
So it'll look like the house is burning.
Right.
Kind of like in Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah. It's kind of like as this war rages on between the pirates and the
Just
others.
Just to be clear, it's a special effect. They're not literally lighting on fire.
Yes.
Hopefully.
No need to call the fire department.
Or our insurance company.
Yeah.
Very cool. Well, I'm really excited just to see, you know, people have kind of been talking for months now, like Canby's already, especially like at the holiday season, kind of a fun place to go around to see the different lights. There are a lot of people that kind of get into it.
Mm-hmm.
And for a while now, just with everything that's been canceled and just like you mentioned earlier, yeah. Stephanie, the need for kind of some light in our lives,
yep.
we're kind of getting amped up about the holiday season just to see what folks come up with. I mean, we've all been... or not all, but you know, stuck in our houses and not having as much fun things to do this year. So hopefully some creative juices have been flowing. I don't know if you just kind of expect that as well, or if you've even heard from other folks in town that they're looking to do some fun stuff this year.
I know that our neighborhood, everybody I've heard from wants to do Halloween. So I'm curious to see what starts popping up.
Yeah, nobody started
challenging.
Yeah, your neighbors are looking a lot more understated so far. But.
Well, we keep just reading that things are getting canceled. So,
right.
you know, so yeah. a lot of the trunk or treats are getting canceled. The downtown trick or treating is getting mm-hmm. canceled.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if it were to come to that, mm-hmm. at least people could drive by or stop by. We're hoping to set up kind of like picture areas, you know, for.
Mm.
This year, people want to take pictures with the skeleton army or, mm-hmm. you know, just different areas because they wanted to do that last year. So, but I just want people to enjoy it.
Yeah.
I mean,
maybe if Scott could design a cannon that shoots candy, like from at least 6 feet away at children. I don't know if that's something you thought of.
And then mini alcohol bottles for the parents.
That feels very safe to me, a cannon that shoots bottles of alcohol. I don't know.
I would love to do that.
I've read all the COVID guidelines. I think that fits.
Just for the ornery kids.
As long as you're more than 6 feet away.
Yeah. Stand right there on that X. Your treasure's coming.
Yes.
Open your mouth and close your eyes.
Yeah.
Boom.
Yeah. Cool. So you guys are cool with people stopping by, checking it out?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, they've already started.
Right.
We're going to cause a stream. Yeah, it was like last year we were getting people from out of state. Washington, so it was big travel.
Oh, wow. All the way
from Vancouver. Man, yeah, they put some miles in because they saw the pirates on Facebook and they wanted to come check it out. So.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah. So it's just a fun thing for us to do. It's a way to be creative and spend lots of hours. And
right. Yeah, I love it. And I love the, I'm really into the kind of DIY stuff and to mm-hmm. take, you know, like a pre-built Home Depot kind of set, but then to really make it your own. I think it's really neat. So.
Yeah, and we try to use a lot of scrap wood. We had a lot of scrap wood, so we try to reuse everything, even stuff that we had last year that we've redone. It's like, oh, I can use that somewhere else. So,
cool. Anything to add?
No, not really.
Yeah. Well, thank you guys so much.
Hey, Frankie, you okay? You seem kind of down.
Yeah, I'm just bummed. I miss going to the Wild Hair. I know you can still get takeout and all, but it's just not the same.
You know they're open again, right?
What?
Yeah, they've been open for a while now. Don't you cover, like, the news?
Hey, I'm only human, okay?
Okay. Well, I can tell you that the Wild Hare and their amazing staff are thrilled to be open again for delicious meals and fun times. They are strictly following all the recommended safety guidelines, and they have the only covered outdoor patio in Canby, with lots of tables spaced 6 feet apart and umbrellas also spaced 6 feet apart and fantastic ambiance. And hey, if you're still more comfortable with carryout, they can hook you up there too. Find their menu and other information online at thewildhairsaloon.net or check them out in Canby and Oregon City. Anything to add, Frankie? Frankie? Oh, I guess he left. God, he must have been really hungry. Now Hear This Canby is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. And of course, our show is edited by Cameron Clausen. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So a round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Canby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. To find more work from her, you can visit her website, olivia13.com.
Now Hear This Canby is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe. And we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.